Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah!
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk in our studios at Meat House. This week, the New Orleans Saints, it was a defensive struggle. Maybe that might be the way to put it, or it was an offensive struggle. One way or another, low-scoring game, 13-10. New Orleans pulls it out. It was an ugly game, but a win is a win, and I think we'll talk about it, too. Maybe we don't appreciate how much the weather was a factor. With me today, Heath Elson-san. So grab a drink, sit back, and relax, because for the next hour or so, we'll be doing New Orleans Saints football talk, BS and beer style.
Hey, folks. All right, listen. I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Welcome in, Heath. This time I actually do care because we don't have Wesley. You know, he gets all jealous if I feel like he feels like I care about you more than him. And you know, I don't want to be that guy. So,
yeah.
So you doing,
how you
all
doing,
right, man?
Dave? Yeah, yeah, man, I'm doing good.
Monday night, I hated it. We had a bye week. Then we come into a Monday night game. It just feels like 2 weeks worth of it just felt like forever, man. And quite frankly, the staying up late, and here's the game's over. I'm in the Eastern time zone. You're in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
When the game's over, I don't know about you, but I can't go right to sleep, man. So I got to read everything, good or bad.
I know y'all wound up, and then
Like, so it's 1 o'clock in the morning before I get to sleep. Got to get up and take care of business in the morning. But I don't know where to start. Let's just start a little bit with the struggles on offense, and they continue. And I was really discouraged by it. But, you know, as with everything that I do, if you give it a little time, give it a few days, I kind of look at it from a different perspective. And let's not forget that the Saints were down. We're already down a bunch of players, right?
Right.
But we already down Harris. We down Hill. We already down Thomas. And while we did get Traquan Smith back, and that's a whole nother subject, he was obviously rusty. He didn't play very well. Matter of fact, not playing well is a nice way to put it. But the point is that I don't know if I'm going to talk about how poorly the Saints played and how rough it was, or transition it to something positive. And that's what I'm going to do first. Then we'll talk about how bad the offense was.
All right.
Going into the season, Heath, I thought he had the potential to be a good quarterback, that the Saints could take him, you know, train him up, school him up. Breeze could, you know, put his arm around him. We'll climb up on a chair or something, and then put his arm around him and then, you know, lead him in the right direction. He could, a new offense, better coaching, all these things. And I thought that Jameis Winston had a chance. But what I was worried about is with the lack of offensive weapons. And as we started losing guys, I worried more that now Jameis is not only not going to get a chance to shine, he's going to struggle because he doesn't have playmakers. So he's going to have to start. Eventually, we're going to be behind, have to start forcing the ball. Quite frankly, it's been the complete opposite. Jameis Winston has, knock on wood, okay, hasn't been turning the ball over. Matter of fact, I've noticed a significant decrease in those, oh, damn, plays. Like, what are you doing, plays? Like, why would you do that? Where he had some of those, but he got away with it. Not many turnovers. So I'm looking at Jameis Winston and the type of game where you're in and you're struggling and, you know, every points are hard to come by. And I almost said it somewhere near the beginning of the fourth quarter because we were texting back and forth. And I decided to keep that to myself.
Yeah.
But he turned out he played mistake-free football.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, that's the rap anyway, right? In other words, you start thinking, oh, well, you know, he threw those 30 interceptions. He's trying to press it, you know. He's trying to make something happen. He's just being careless, whatever it is. And I agree with you now. It's almost like it's an overcorrection a little bit too far to the other way. You know, it's like he's being super conservative and careful, maybe too much so at times. You know, he's, he holds the ball too long sometimes. And then other times I think, you know, I've heard former quarterbacks who are color commentaries now say this over the years. Sometimes when he throws the ball, especially in those shorter intermediate passes that he hasn't been very accurate on, he has that look of a guy that's trying to aim the ball. You know what I'm saying? In other words, when he throws it, he's really thinking about trying to place it in the very – and I think what he's trying to do, and the reason why he's throwing some of them high and some of the ones coming across the middle that's a little too far, too high and maybe a little too far in front, is that he's really thinking about placing the ball where away from the defender and all of that kind of stuff, which I'm sure is something he learned, you know, working with Breeze and with Peyton. I mean, that's what Breeze was famous for, right? He puts the ball in the right spot all the time. And so all of that to say, I think we're at a point where it's kind of that thing, like they say, you know, tear him down and then build him back up. And he's kind of in that spot right now where he's thinking a lot about it. You know, he's that linebacker that gets caught flat-footed because he's thinking too much and he's not just playing with instinct. You know, you hear – we've all heard the guys discuss that all the time, former players and whatnot. And eventually it'll get natural and he'll – you know, the timing and the – he'll get the feel for it and he'll start making those plays – without thinking and everything. And then that's when I think the floodgates are really going
to
open up.
And okay. So yes and no. So first of all, to finish or to piggyback on what you just said, I think that that's what it is we're now starting to see. We saw the Jameis trying to learn the offense, get comfortable. And I think as he goes and doesn't have these crazy or stupid or, you know, and again, that every quarterback has every Sunday, even the best of them, make these crazy plays. Like, and when I say crazy, I'm talking about you spin it around, you try to throw it to somebody and a defensive lineman picks it off and runs it back for a touchdown. Those things happen even to good quarterbacks, but he's eliminated those for the most part. And at some point, even he knows in the back of his head, he has to eliminate those plays. So now that he has, I think there's confidence that starts being built and we're starting to see a more confident Jameis Winston. And I think now what we have to find is his happy place, a happy place between don't make the error and but still try to make a play. Here's where I go into maybe the next subject. Our wide receivers are so bad that there aren't as many, even whenever he's feeling everything and feeling good, guys still aren't getting open. Or he throws a ball and guys won't make a play for him. Or he throws a ball and a receiver just quits running, just says, hey, you know what? And during the game, when Smith quit running, it was a crossing route, would have been a huge gain, if not a touchdown. And I thought to myself, I sent a text and I was joking. I was like, oh, he thought Breeze was quarterback. And, you know, joking that no way Breeze would have thrown the ball 25 yards downfield. So he quit running. Right. But the fact is, I do wonder if it goes through Smith's head that he's just like, oh, the ball's not coming my way. I mean, I'm already down the field and he quits running. And then all of a sudden, boom, here comes, you know, a zip line right at him. And it's too late. He stopped. So that's one, as I guess we kind of transition into, you know, including Smith, because then there's Winston, then there's Smith talk, then there's Jameis Winston and Smith talk. Yeah. So Smith comes back and listen, I was upset. I've been a Smith supporter. I never thought that he was garbage. I never thought he was going to be a number one, but I did think that he was the best receiver out of all the guys that are on the field right now. Problem is he came back and man, I defended him and I saw some things that I just didn't like. And it has less to do with talent and more to do with mentality. He seemed to be pouting a little bit. He seemed to be like, I don't know, man, kind of like a baby, you know, he didn't seem like, you know, just, oh man. I mean, what are you doing on the play where he got called for pass interference? It wasn't pass interference, but at the end of the day, he still was, it wasn't running. It wasn't really doing anything. It just kind of, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So now Jameis Winston finally has enough of it. And I'm not exactly sure because it wasn't anything specific. You know, it wasn't a play where he dropped the ball or was, you know, it wasn't that play. But Jameis lets him have it on the sideline, and I absolutely loved it. It showed some leadership. It showed that he's taking ownership. He doesn't feel like, well, okay, it's not my place. He went out there and held Smith accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's good to see. You know, so long as he's not throwing tantrums on the sideline on a regular basis. Now, I could go on other quarterbacks that constantly look like they're pouting and pissed off on the sideline and chewing people out. Everything else is somebody else's fault. But yeah, I mean, you know, he went over there and I don't know if Smith wasn't receptive to what he had to say about what should have happened on that play or whatever it is that he was telling him, but it is good to see on Jameis's part that he's, you know, and we've seen it in other ways, right? I mean, he really seems to be stepping into this role now that this is his team and that, you know, he's been extremely vocal and in his interviews, he's given really good interviews and everything, you know,
saying all the right things.
Right. He's really seems to be comfortable. Now, Smith, to his part of it, frustration. I mean, you know, he's been out with the injury for a long time. He didn't even really practice that long before this game. He just got activated and all. He came out, he had a bad game. Then you have the, you know, so you know, did he start pouting? I don't know. I have to see more going into the future because up until this point, I don't really hearing anything about Smith being a problem or a whiny player. Or I mean, not that I remember. If you know something, then, but I don't remember any negative.
No, I think when I said that, I meant more of when I thought that Smith's problems came with obviously injuries, but that he just, you know, Breeze wouldn't go to him and he would just kind of disappear. Because Breeze wouldn't go to him because when Breeze is expecting you to break and be at a certain spot at 7 yards and yeah, whatever, that he wasn't, he was at 9 yards and, you know, kind of in that space.
Yeah.
But what it looks like to me is that he, okay, this is just a feeling because I don't really have any evidence. It's just a few handful of plays, but I just saw, and again, so when I say whiny or pouting, I didn't mean it as, oh, he goes around the field at practice whining and pouting. I just meant that instead of bucking up and saying, man, I got this, I'm gonna take care of it, man, I'm gonna do it. He just kind of seemed like, you know, the shoulders are dropped, all the signs of a person who's defeated. And yeah, that's what struck me. And I mentioned to you before the show started, it's like, listen, I'm not done with Smith. I know a lot of people were done with Smith before, and this was just more ammo for them to say, I'm done. Okay, be done with him when we have enough receivers to replace him. Right now, you can't right, be right. done. We don't have that option. Okay. Right. So I do. He's never played this poorly. I mean, he's never even come close to playing this poor. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, like to say he's ever had a game like this, it was unbelievable. Now, Rusty, you're right. He came back. I almost think in hindsight, because I'll be the first one to say we need to get him on the field. But in hindsight, maybe the coaching staff did him a disservice by saying we need you on the field and get him out there before he had a chance to get acclimated and back up to speed. And he was also, I think he had the second highest snap count of all the receivers. So the point is they didn't just dip their toe in the water.
Yeah.
They're just like, get on the field, start playing. Yeah. So I think that he just had more opportunities to, get back in the swing of things. But what ended up happening is he had more opportunities to look bad. And, you know, I just hope that based on what I saw, which was a guy that didn't seem like mentally tough, is what I felt I saw. Now, I could be wrong, but and I'm open to that idea because it's happened once or twice. But what I want to see next week, and I hope that we don't have something where now he's like, oh, well, you know, Jameis fussed at me and this. And look, in Jameis, to piggyback on Jameis saying all the right things and doing all the right things, look, we all saw what happened, and it wasn't easy. You can't hide that. It wasn't just like, well, who did he run the wrong route or did you throw it to the wrong spot? It was obvious that Smith was just having a bad day, but Jameis fussed at him and went to him two consecutive times after that. And so I'm always saying something and trying to a little levity when I'm frustrated, but I'm like, oh, now Jameis is trying to make up with him. You know what I'm saying? So he threw him a couple of balls. One was like a 12-yard pass on second and 18. And, you know, but the point is Jameis is not like, man, I yelled at you, I'm done with you. It's almost like, hey, man. And I just can't help but being more and more impressed with Jameis Winston's leadership because, yeah, you know, I know the people who like Jameis are applauding right now. The people who are against Jameis are like rolling their eyes like, oh, come on. But at the end of the day, man, you get on somebody to light a fire under them, then you go back to them and give them a chance to make up for it. Instead, if you just, you know, if it's a personal vendetta or grudge, you just say, man, I'm not even going to throw the ball your way, man. You can go out there and just run all day. I ain't going to. And he didn't, man. He went back at him and gave him a chance. And in a small way, he, I don't want to say redeemed himself, because if I look that word up, it probably means that made up for everything, and he didn't. Yeah. But at least at the end of the game, he made a play and made a catch that was somewhat important in an important time of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I agree. That's the old, you know, the guy fumbles and we as fans, you know, put him on a bench and nobody can give you know, and then what the experts say and the former coaches and players go, man, you got to get the ball right back in that guy's hands, get him back out there, get him back on the horse, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, we saw during the offseason that Traquan and Jameis spent a lot of time working out together individually. And so I'm sure they have a relationship and a chemistry. And so I really think what Jameis, you know, went over there was, it was strictly about the play. In other words, it wasn't personal. It wasn't, he didn't feel like when he ran over there that this guy, you know, can't get it done or whatever. I think what he was saying is, look, man, I know what you can do. And we worked on this stuff in the offseason. And so let's, you know, see it. And so then when they get back out there, he's going to throw it to him again and try to get this guy going. Because I think Jameis feels like he can be. Jameis probably realizes he's the best receiver that's out on the field right now when he comes
back.
And they have a chemistry. And so I think Jameis was probably thinking coming into this game, man, we're going to be able to get something going. Now I got my boy here and, you know, we're going to get rolling. And so, yeah, he's going to go back to him, try to keep going to him to get him into the flow, you know, and get him going. I think it'll work itself out. I think it'll be a, it was ugly during the game, but I didn't come away from it thinking, oh, man, you know, we got Traquan back finally, and that went to shit. Now it's all done, and, you know, Chuck, you know, just throw it all away. You know, in other words, I remember looking at it thinking, this guy's rusty, and it's going to take him a little time. We talked about this on the last show. You remember? I brought it up. I said, we got guys coming
back. Did.
We may go through an adjustment period here where things are out of whack and stuff. Everybody get back into their spot and everything.
I don't know, Heath. And okay, so I think the reason it happened, and so I don't know what part to say first. Now, I love to start a sentence and then not finish it and go on, but I don't know if I've ever seen somebody that out of whack in all of my years watching football, not with the Saints, ever. I think the reason is that most teams aren't that desperate, right?
Right.
So they put the guy in, they ease him in, they're like, oh, you know, we might throw you a couple of balls today, but they ease him in. Well, yeah. I think the Saints not only eased him in, but they threw him in, you know, head first into the deep end, and he wasn't quite ready. And then when you would think that, okay, things aren't going well, come on, let's just sit him down, let him catch his breath. They were like, well, we have no other options. Keep throwing the ball. And again, most guys never get a chance to make that many mistakes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Because again, it wasn't just the mistakes that we saw there. It was talked about, and you saw it in a game where one time Jameis had to kind of, he had him by the arm and just kind of, you know, I don't want to make it sound worse than it was, but he was talking to him and he kind of, in a frustrated way, pushed him like, go, you know, and he went and Smith went and lined up. So there were obviously issues with lining up properly. And so, man, for everything that we saw, we have no idea how many wrong routes he ran. You know what I'm saying? So for everything that we were like, oh my God, that's horrible. The coaches are watching the film and there's probably twice as many mistakes. Yeah. And the poor guy, never a chance to just look, just ease yourself back in. They're like, no, come on. You got to keep going.
Yeah.
So hopefully we start seeing that improve. And again, I want to reiterate, I'm making jokes. It was a comedy of mistakes.
Yep.
But I have never seen him play that poorly. And I expect it to get much better even this week. So hopefully it does add to the team, because quite frankly, the only weapon we had on that field was Kamara. I mean, in the passing game and the running game, and I'm scared to death this guy's just going to be worked to death.
I agree. This is turning into a problem, because we don't have any, you know, we have, you know, Callaway shows up every once in a while and does something, you know, Juwan Johnson might come in and make one play that, you know, we don't have anybody consistently. They don't have to do anything spectacular. Just consistently make routine type plays, get open for a 5-yarder, a 10-yarder on a fairly regular basis. You know what I'm saying? And apparently that's not happening right now. I'm not watching the all 22, right? So I can't say for sure how many times did Jameis not pull a trigger when he really should have, because he's thinking and trying to make sure he doesn't make mistakes. And how many times was a guy really just absolute, nobody was open at all.
Right. And I'm okay. sure it's a combination of all that.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a combination. It's just a matter of what the ratio is. The distribution.
Right. Well said.
But I've seen some plays when they go back and show the play from behind. And look, the receiver, you know, at the NFL level, especially, you know, guys like Breeze and Brady, and you're not open by much as a wide receiver, right? There's a big difference between being open. You know, to me, the guy would have to have nobody within 10 yards of him in any direction for me to consider him open, right, and want to throw the ball. For guys like this, they throw the ball, man, you ain't even got a couple of feet of separation if you're lucky. Right. And so I've seen some of the plays shown from behind, and they're running on, and I'm thinking, man, you guys, he's not in front by much, but he's got the angle. And he was open, in other words. By NFL standards, that guy was really open, and Jameis didn't throw the ball. And he maybe even took a sack, or maybe he took off and ran, and it could have even been a positive play, right, because he's got the legs to make enough of plays when he runs. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm not claiming he's Lamar Jackson or anything.
No, actually, he's more athletic than I ever thought he was.
He is to me, too. But, well, you know, I say that. I remembered him being more athletic at Florida State. And then And watching with the NFL, I'm like, God, I thought this guy could move.
Well, and you look at his body now, too. I mean, he looks more lean. He was chubbier back then. So
I think that had a big part to do with it. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, all of that to say, it'll get better, I think. It needs to start getting better, hopefully, a little bit faster.
Well, okay, it needs to get better. We're going to play Tampa Bay this weekend, and they have a good defensive front. You're not going to be able to run the ball on first down, second down. And you're talking about really getting Kamara killed. Their linebackers, their defensive line. We just will not be able to just go. Oh, but, okay, I mean, is this the right? I want to talk about this, and then I'll transition into some breaking news. You just mentioned it, things that we took for granted. Like when Breeze was there, we took for granted the little things. And all of a sudden, when we have all these guys out injured, I start really appreciating things like catching a punt. And I don't mean fielding a punt, running back for a touchdown. I'm talking about running up and catching the punt so it doesn't roll for 20 more yards, especially in a game where every yard seemed to be critical, hard to come by. Points are hard to come by. And Callaway, listen, his first return, I remember complaining because he had maybe 5 yards and he could have just ran straight. But he tries to turn and run and ends up, not that he lost more yards, but the point is he doesn't have that skill set. He catches the ball, run, get down, don't turn the ball over. Other things, 3, 4, 5 yard passes where it just seemed like a gimme, you know, to either the running back in the flats or just to a receiver, just to Breeze would get that little 5 yards, 3 yards, and it just was a positive play. Now that seems to be a struggle. And you know what? I've heard it too. And I never really put this in perspective, but I've heard other people talk about it, and I like to give people credit or not take credit for something that didn't really hit me. Is we don't necessarily have the receivers right now that are your short to intermittent receivers. We don't have Michael Thomas's or a tight end who's super effective. So right now, those short passes, it's not just a matter of accuracy. It's also a matter of having guys that work well in that area, you know. But on the other hand, other than Harris, we don't necessarily have the people that work well down the field. So it's a combination of the quarterback not being accurate and the receivers not being great. Another thing we take for granted, like extra points. We have run into some struggles that you just kind of look at as gimmies, even though when Breeze is playing, we're like, oh, man, he don't have the deep ball anymore. But you just, well, that's just a 5-yard pass on first down, 4-yard pass. Now we're like, golly. The only thing is that Winston can get it all back for you on one play. So it's let's not act like last year we didn't have games where we only scored 17 points or 14 points. We had those games too. The difference is Drew Brees would kind of grind it out and Jameis Winston was just like, oh, there it is, you know, 62-yard touchdown. So those struggles. Now, you said something else and I was going to talk about that and I can't remember what you said. And if you can remember before I just move on to another topic. It's the breaking news. The Saints traded for Mark Ingram. So Mark Ingram is now a New Orleans Saint and probably ready to go. I don't know if he's necessarily a great player anymore. I don't know if he's ever a great player. He's a good player. But the thing about it that most people trade for this guy, trade for that guy. The problem is how long does it take them to learn the offense? And right. If it takes them a long time to learn the offense, then now you trading for a guy that it's going to be week 12, 14 before they really acclimated to what's going on. Mark Ingram, right into the flow. So yeah. I think I mentioned that Kamara's getting way too many touches. Zigbo, I kind of vaguely remember him in the preseason. But, I mean, as soon as he got the ball, man, he was just smothering the backfield. And just at some point, you're like, golly, if you give it to anyone other than Kamara, nothing good happens. But you just can't keep giving it to Kamara.
Right. That one carry that was he had zero chance of that. They were in the back. They almost could have took the hand off. I mean, it was like you can't put that. And he made a nice, you know, he double clutched a little bit, but he made the one catch.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He
didn't catch
me.
It super clean. Yeah, he scared me a little bit, but he caught it and made the play. But look, let's say Mark Ingram is better than Ozigbo, okay? Unless he's really gone downhill since the last time we saw him. And the other thing about Mark Ingram is that he'll help with speaking of little things that you take for granted, Mark Ingram is gonna do well blocking for the quarterback, right?
Right, right. Pass protection. Yeah.
And so he will help. Now we could go back to, boy, I really wish, especially since I don't think we really, really, really needed to do it. I wish we had just kept Murray.
Yeah, yeah.
Replaced Ingram essentially. Now we got rid of Murray. Now we're bringing Ingram back. Murray's gone out there and taken the starting job. Baltimore now. Yeah,
well, I don't know if he took it so much as everybody was injured, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I mean, so they got a stable of running backs, and he emerged as the guy. So my point is that, you know, that doesn't surprise me considering how he played. It was strictly, I'm assuming, about money. They felt Tony Jones Jr. gave him enough of what Murray did for a big difference in price, right? Yeah. That's ultimately what it came down to. It certainly wasn't because Murray didn't play well. And I don't think the Saints coaching staff panicked because he only averaged a yard a carry in preseason. Everybody
when I heard that, I just rolled my eyes. People, right, he lifts washed.
He's done.
Stop it.
No, he's not, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, so it's funny how things go around. So now Mark Ingram is back. Because we've run into trouble not having Murray and then having Tony Jones go down and we got nothing but Kamara left. And so,
well, I think, look, the Saints needed it and hopefully he can still be effective. That's the only thing is I haven't watched him. How long has he been going? 2 years? He doesn't have a lot of tread off the tire since he left, except for he's older because he hasn't played. Now that's a good thing or a bad thing. Everywhere he went to Baltimore and he immediately got replaced by younger guys. But again, you're always looking for that younger, cheaper guy. And if you have him and he's more explosive and giving you everything the veteran, doesn't mean the veteran's not good, but you always trying to get younger and cheaper. I think
he doesn't have to be amazing though. Right. In other words, we're not bringing him in. He doesn't have to be the guy that he was the last time. It would be great, but he doesn't have to be. What we need is a guy that can consistently line up and get you 3 and 4 yards and stuff like, and I think he's probably certainly still capable of doing that. And like I said before, he'll also be an asset in the passing game because he's very good at picking up blitzers and blocking in the pass game as a running back. So,
okay. Another thing with the struggles of the offense, I was watching the game again today. We had at least 3 different times where we went for it on 4th and short and we converted all 3. But that tells you something. We also Seattle missed 2 field goals, tough conditions. And, listen, it's not like we haven't been on the other end of missing field goals. And the other thing is Woods jumping off sides on 4th down really gave us a shot at getting closer. And so we haven't really figured out what our new kicker, I think his name's Johnson, but, I'm not going to really start. It's kind of like women I used to date until they stick around for a couple of weeks. I call him baby, so maybe I'll just call the new kickers baby.
Yeah, there you go.
But Woods jumped off sides, the LSU guy, Saints drafted him, if I'm not mistaken. That's the same guy, right?
Yep.
So, it's like, how do you do that? So And we still didn't capitalize on the last, it might've been the last play of the game offensively for the Saints. There was a screen pass set up, and it's just very disappointing. It was all set up. Winston ended up taking a sack, and quite frankly, it was a touchdown. All he had to do was just get the ball to Johnson. I don't know what happened or why he pulled the or didn't pull the trigger, but and again, to me, that's one of those things where Winston's probably saying, "Look, I don't want to lose any yards," because even Breeze made the comment on the Manning thing that he should have floated back some. And I think on Winston's mind is, "I'm not floating anywhere. I do not want to lose any yards to put our team in a bad spot to not be able to kick an easy field goal and get the lead." So anyway, but they're just little things that you got to believe they're going to get corrected. Now, Keyshawn Johnson, who is the uncle of Thomas, was on, I think, First Take on ESPN. And I saw the clip. Johnson was just being a complete Saints homer, said that the Saints are going to beat Tampa Bay twice, said they're one of the top two or three teams, top two or three seeds in the NFC. And while nobody really agreed with his take, one of the interesting things that came out of it was he said, "You never know, Mike might play this weekend against Tampa Bay." Now, I find that hard to believe, because once you come off the PUP list, and those guys in the Dome Patrol who are listening, I know they love this conversation about to come. We had a big old discussion about it. So he has 6 weeks to be activated. He can be taken off a PUP and in six. So my point is 6 weeks. If he's not ready to go in 6 weeks, he ain't going to be ready. No. So if he ends up coming back this week, then I want to know why he didn't come off the PUP last week when he could, and then let him practice with the team in an inactive status, because I don't want what happened to Smith to happen to him. Now, I don't think it would ever be that bad with a guy like Michael Thomas. He just has too much dog in him. Yeah. But you still got to think there's going to be a ton of rust, because Smith at least participated in a lot of training camp. Mike Thomas hasn't touched the football, you know what I mean, since the playoff game last year. So and another thing is Johnson being a homer was making this low-key narrative that, well, the Saints just – or not the Saints. He didn't say any names, but maybe sometimes people put information out that they want you to hear. It may not be the truth. And I'm like thinking, oh, wow, man, maybe he's saying the same. And I said, well, wait. The Saints were like, yeah, don't get the surgery because we'd want you to have it closer to June. Like, what world do you live in where the team's like, get it done now? And it's most of the time it's the players who are like, I would prefer not to take the surgery. The team's like, I got a doctor in a van out in the parking lot. He'll take care of it for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, being his uncle, you never know when he's trying to throw something out there to deflect a little criticism or something off of Mike Thomas. So, you know, now, would there be gamesmanship involved in why they didn't take him off last week and all the week before the Tampa game, you know, and, you know, kind of, hey, surprise.
That's how Peyton does.
You know, it's possible, right? So, it would certainly be great. I'm all for throwing him a few passes, even if it don't go all that well, to get his ass back out on the field. You know what I'm saying? Because Michael Thomas on his worst day can't be much worse than what we've been getting on a consistent basis out of the rest of these guys. And like you said, that's not going to happen with Mike. If nothing else, go back to the slant, right? All you got to do is run 5 yard slant. We're going to put the ball in the right spot and you're going to catch it, because that's just who you are, you know? And so, I just keep sitting here trying to imagine what it's going to be like when the Saints finally have at least close, you know, like we said before, you ain't never going to have the whole team.
No,
there's always going to be somebody hurt, especially when you got guys like Davenport and Pete. There's certain guys that just, you know, I hate to say it, but so far they just consistently.
That's their history. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the history. And so,
I mean, poor Pete, he comes out of the game because he got rolled up on, goes in for one play, comes out with a pec injury.
Yeah. I don't know if it was because, you know, he came back in and he couldn't move good with his ankles, so he had to reach out and try to grab a guy and it tore his back because he was blowing past it. Whatever the case was, you know, did we get definitive word now? Is he gone for the season?
You know what? I haven't seen anything that said he was out, but everything
that was
I've read.
Speculation.
I remember when Davenport went down. At first, everybody thought he was done for the season. But then the next day, you started hearing little things that, like, oh, the MRI didn't show as much as they thought. And It's hopeful. I haven't seen anything about Pete other than they worry that he's done. Yeah. He's done.
Usually when they say that and they're that specific about a pec muscle and all, they pretty well know, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But, you know, now that said, hey, you know, Throckmorton, by all accounts, from what I could tell, he's played pretty well, you know? And so he played on the right side, obviously, when McCoy was out and Ruiz was at center. Now he flipped over to the left side. And I didn't watch his snap at every snap, you know, but by all accounts, I don't remember anything going, oh my God, Throckmorton just, you know, let a guy waltz right through and kill Jameis or anything. So, you know, hopefully, I mean, he seems to be solid.
Solid. Yeah. And the thing about it, listen, I always say this, I don't eat film like I used to, but I didn't notice anything that was glaring. And that's the thing with Pete that gets him the most is because everything I hear is that he's pretty good. I'm not watching all 65 of his snaps, but when he does something bad, it's really, really bad. And Throckmorton seemed to hold his own. And quite frankly, I don't know how much you look, I'd rather have Pete gone and get back our center and our left tackle than to, you know, so I think this exchange that you look, just chalk it up as cost of doing business. Yeah. You mentioned,
I do remember Throckmorton getting way out ahead on a screen pass though. Oh, and he was moving downfield. I mean, he was way out ahead, but he had a choice of like three. He kind of didn't know what he got out there and they kind of didn't know what to do with himself. He was like,
well, those big guys get moving. They're not changing direction. Like, if just don't stand in a straight line and he won't be able to block you.
Yeah, Kamara ran up behind him and he still kind of hadn't made a commitment on who or what he was going to block or what he was going to do. It was like, damn, dude, come on.
So you mentioned Davenport was an absolute beast. I put on Twitter some videos from the film I was watching. And I just, the guy is just violent. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it, but he just, he's not the fastest guy and he might have good 40 time, but he's just not a speed rusher. He is just now at the point where he takes linemen and throws them to the ground and gets to the quarterback. And you know, like, hey, if that's your move, I used to talk about this, Will Smith, he didn't have a lot of moves. He didn't have a speed rush. Everything he did was just a bull rush, but you knew that when he hit that tackle, you had 2.8 seconds to get rid of the ball because he was going to push that guy into your lap. This is that on steroids. I mean, there were at least three plays that I found, and these were the plays where he actually affected the play. I'm sure there are other times when it may not have done anything, but he had a hit where he didn't make the tackle for a loss. He threw a lineman out of the way. He had two pass rushes. He even took a penalty where they called it pass interference. Oh, not pass interference. I'm sorry. Roughing the passer.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, he flew by the guy and the quarterback and hit him kind of in the midsection with his hand. There's no way that was roughing the passer.
No.
But I asked and everyone seemed to recall. They said, no, it was roughing the passer. Wesley even went and got the thing from the stats that shows it was called roughing the passer. But then Sean Payton in his after game interview, presser said that the referee came to him and said, no, it was for helmet to helmet, which I watched the video over and over and I don't see anything that's specific. It's not, there wasn't really any helmet to helmet, but when in the world have you ever heard of an offensive or defensive lineman in the course of blocking? I'm not talking about drilling somebody who's trying to make a tackle, but in the course of blocking a counterpart, get called for helmet to helmet.
No,
it just doesn't happen. And hell, is this the time to talk more about Davenport or talk about how bad the officiating was?
Oh,
you take it. You take it.
Yeah. Well, as far as Davenport's concerned, man, for him, it's just about staying healthy. We know the guy's got talent. We know he can be disruptive. If he stayed healthy and stayed on the field long enough, eventually the sacks and the tackles for losses that he seems to flush to somebody else, you know, he's that guy, he's disruptive, but he's never won it, ultimately winds up making a play or whatever. That would come for him. I have no doubt that just like Cam Jordan, it would eventually come for him. He's going to develop a little bit more. But you know what? If he can consistently take and tackle a quarterback with his own offensive lineman, I'm all for it. You know what I'm saying? Just pick that dude up and swing him around until you knock some shit down. That's good enough. Like, I don't care. He doesn't have to get all of the sacks and everything if he's being effective, right? And if it wasn't for his injury history and if it wasn't for the two first-round draft picks, he wouldn't have that much scrutiny on him as it is.
Right.
But the point is that, you know, I hope that the guy can stay on the field. because I agree with you. A difference he can make.
Yes. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's going to, like, I think that the way he plays would make Saints fans happier, but I look at it another way, that all it's going to do is make them more upset when he's not on the field, right? Because they're like, okay, this guy costs us two first round. It's, none of that's his fault.
Right.
But it's almost like, I think a fan would probably rather choose, we gave up two first rounders, the guy's a bust, we got rid of him, than we gave up two first rounds, which is still too much per se. That's what they would be saying. But he's amazing, but he's always injured.
Right.
So right now, my biggest fear is exactly what you said, that he gets injured again. And we have, without a doubt, seen the difference he makes. He doesn't. I've said, why doesn't he get a lot of sacks? And I think the reason is because he's just so violent and he pushes guys around. There's still generally a guy in between him. I don't rarely see him getting a free run at the quarterback. It's usually he's getting double teamed and he's pushing a guy back. So maybe that's why he doesn't get sacks. It's because he doesn't really get around guys. And I'm painting with a very broad brush, but I swear the plays that I always send you guys, because, you know, y'all do your thing with him and I'm very supportive. So anything he does well, I find a video and I send it to y'all. But most of the videos of him taking a guy and even throwing him to the ground or whatever, but it's never like him getting right by someone. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. And I'm trying to find an answer for why he consistently terrorizes offenses, but yet comes out with no sacks.
I think you just answered it, because he's never free and on his own. He's still engaged almost all the time. He's just able to shove somebody into the lane or into the
quarterbacks are running away from him.
And they got to run away from him. But he doesn't get off the block, essentially, or he does very late in the play, you know, by the time he gets free or whatever. But look, like I said, you know, that's okay. The sacks are glamorous. We all like to see it, and they are important because it's a loss of yards and all. Okay. So I get it, but it's not all that there is. You know what I'm saying? It's how many times did he mess up the timing of the play? How many times did he make the quarterback have to run out of pocket? How many times is he doing that on a run play, right? Where he totally blew up a run that was designed, or a screen that was supposed to come to this side, and the quarterback's got to throw it at the guy's feet because Davenport's already shoved the offensive lineman past the running back or whatever. And so that's fine, so long as you can stay on the field, right?
I would take that, is what you're saying. Hey, we'll take it. I'll take that.
If he stays
and give me four sacks and what you're doing.
Yeah, if he plays, 13-plus games a season on a regular basis and does what he does, that's good. Yeah. Okay, because he'll have plenty of effect on the game in the little ways, and the coaches can, we see it, but the coaches really see it when they watch the film and everything. And so now to the officials. Dude, I can't even, I wanted to try to write down and go back. I've not had the time with work being as busy as it was. So I don't. All I know is it's one of the worst games that I can remember. Like, I was beside myself with some of these calls. The Davenport call, which led us to this part of the conversation, was one. Smith on the offensive, the quote-unquote offensive pass interference. Okay, that was weak as hell. Like, I don't even, But there was another one that I swear I think was even worse than those two earlier in the game, and I just cannot remember exactly what happened. Even the commentator went, where's the penalty? Like, he kept.
Yes.
I don't remember exactly what the play was, but it was like, it was horrible. I mean, it was like, you look back on it, it's like, it wasn't even like, not only was it not holding or whatever it was, he didn't even touch the guy.
Right. I remember that. And I can't remember what the play is either, but yes. And the commentators just pointed out I don't know. It's almost just, like,
it was little things. It wasn't even just the calls. There was some bad spots. There were, I don't even know, dude. I can't even remember it all, but I know it was horrible.
Statistically, I guess that crew's one of the crews that throws the most flags, because Peyton talked about that. He said, we knew going in that these guys, they throw a lot of flags, and it's just, they just throw it and make up a call.
Yeah. Okay. And that's going to happen sometimes. All right. Okay. Great. Fine. The real problem with this is that it was one-sided. Okay. So if you're going to throw lots of flags, we're doing it on both sides. Cause guess what? Both sides are doing the same shit. You got just as many holds. You got just as many hands to the faces and things that get missed throughout the game. So call it evenly, which was definitely not the case the other night. You know, I don't know, man. We keep going back to this, it's hard for me to believe that a league where every franchise is in the billion plus multiple billion dollar values, you got TV contracts of just absolutely ignorant money, and we got part-time officials who have other jobs and stuff and they come out. We got old guys, and you got guys that just consistently have bad performances, but apparently are not being reviewed and then either got rid of, replaced, reprimanded, something by the league to clean up the officiating. Like, how does a league with this much money and
resources,
fan support and resource and all this stuff, as big as the NFL is, not able to do better with the officiating and what they do? It's been sticking in my side for years now, and I still just don't understand it. But anyway.
No, listen, that's a good rant. I'm not one, you know, there's certain people just like everything's a holding call, or a missed holding call, and everything's a, but, you know, I generally, it's like, it's football, man, just play. But, I mean, some of the stuff was just so ridiculous that, yeah. And then you mentioned that the commentators on Monday night pointed out something. But the commentators, and listen, okay, horrible. I know I just sound like everybody else because there's like a weekly thread on it, the Twitter, but I'm not one. I rarely, and you can, I don't talk. The commentators, it's just like, say whatever, I don't care. Now, in the preseason, when they actually have the home team crews, sometimes I got to turn that off. But even when I listen to it, I realize they're homers talking about their team. They're not here to talk about the Saints. They're here to talk about their team.
Right.
But it was just frustrating. Listening to these guys early in the game, it was the Lattimore situation where, like, they were talking about Lattimore, like he was just like, "Oh my God, what is his name?
DK Metcalf."
I've been calling him DJ. Just to be funny that I right. literally forgot what his actual initials were.
Yeah,
but DK Metcalf.
Oh,
they were saying, oh, you could just tell by Lattimore's body language that he's just intimidated. And I'm like, he's one of the best cornerbacks in the league, one of the top 3, 5, whatever you want to call him, cornerbacks in the league. And you think that just because a bigger receiver got him a couple of times, it's a big boy. Metcalf pushed him down a couple of times or whatever. And for the most part, he shut him down. But they are just like raving about Metcalf that, and he got – and then I can't remember. Oh, there was one time where Roby came up, made a tackle on Penny, and literally flipped them upside down. It seemed like when Seattle made a play that their voices literally got excited.
Yeah.
And then the Saints come up, make a tackle. The running back literally flips over.
Yeah.
And they say, Penny on the carry. And I was about to lose my mind. I'm sitting there like, that's all you're going to say about that.
And, I agree. And they're horrible in multiple ways.
And I texted two or three other just blatant instances where, you know, not just like, oh, they just talked a little bit too much about the tent. It was just like they were cheering for Seattle. It was just like, Seattle's so great. And I'm like, how? I get if Russell Wilson's there and you want to just rave about him because he deserves that. But I don't know what about that team just deserved.
Yeah. What about the 2-4 Seattle Seahawks is there to rave about? You
know? Right.
That leads me to another. I'm glad you brought that up because you would say, okay, well, Metcalf shoved Lattimore first. Lattimore shoves back and gets the flag, right?
Right.
Now, we know that often happens. It's the second guy. The problem with it is when they show it back and they showed it from a different angle, the official who came running in and actually grabbed the hold of Lattimore. And I'm surprised Lattimore didn't get a second flag because he took the official.
He kind of pushed him, right?
Pushed him off, you know. But that official saw the initial shove because he was running in already before that happened because he saw that there was getting ready to be an escalation between these two. Now, my question is, when they got into a huddle of officials, why didn't he say, I got this guy on the shove too? He almost shoved Lattimore over because of the difference in his size. The first shove, Lattimore damn near went off his feet. Okay. Yeah. But what they should have done was thrown it. If they were going to do it, they throw it. It's one of those things where they throw it on both sides to try to get control of this shit early before it gets out of hand. Okay. But that's not what they did. Just like everything else on a night, it's like, you know, and the main point being, I know that other officials saw the shove. because he was already running in before Lattimore even, you know, and he was in so quick that he basically took Lattimore away from Metcalf. And then, like I said, I'm almost surprised. I guess I shouldn't complain because he let Lattimore go a little bit when he slapped his hands off. I mean, he could have threw another.
Yeah, I kind of caught that out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, oh God, you know. And it,
yeah.
Well, all right. So last couple of things I want to talk about. We talked about the defense. Davenport comes back. Saints have 5 sacks. Cam Jordan gets his first sack. But next week, we play Tampa Bay. On Yamada returns. Now, all of a sudden, this, if Davenport, and I have no reason to believe he won't, if he continues this, all of a sudden, Jordan looks like a better defensive end. All of a sudden, Passanio looks like a better defensive end. Once on Yamada gets in there, things will change in a way that will be, it's just, I don't know how you can block all these guys, because it's going to take 2 people to handle Auden Yamada. And then all of a sudden, Davenport will get his 2, then Cam Jordan's going to look like an all-pro. So, you know, people are talking about him being washed. And you know what? At this point, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he has lost a step, because I wonder often, is he really as good as what he has been? Or is it the fact that you have on Yamada and Rankins and all these guys in there pass rushing, Davenport and even Hendrickson last year, pass rushing. And then Jordan just does his thing, which is great run defender, good pass rusher. And he racks up on the extra stuff. Yeah. I think that, like, I'm very concerned about the Saints' ability to move the ball in Tampa Bay. But when I realize what's going to happen when Onyemata gets back, our defense is going to be on another level.
Yeah.
The Saints went
on a pretty damn good level as it is.
The Saints went with essentially no pass rush when Davenport went out. And the game that, Turner actually showed a little bit was in a game where, you know, we didn't have the coaches and we were just in complete disarray. So I don't know how to take any of that. But essentially, we've had no pass rush. But our pass defense, now we haven't played a murderer's row of quarterbacks either, but our pass defense has held its own. Now imagine getting that pass defense together with an actual pass rush and a defense that you cannot run on. And all of a sudden, man, this defense is looking all world. I just still worried against another good defense. How are we going to get some points? And so that's my biggest concern.
That, and I agree with you. I'm excited about the possibilities. However, I wouldn't necessarily expect that to show up that much this week, because like Breeze and other quarterbacks like that of their ilk, Brady just doesn't get sacked a lot.
He doesn't.
Brady gets rid of the ball quick. He's going to, you know, so – it's not, in other words, my point is it wouldn't be. Now, can you imagine if this had been, let's go back a week and have Onyemata come back and had him against Seattle in addition
to what
we already did, right? He'd have ate, what the hell is the quarterback, Nick? I can't remember his name anymore.
Now, the thing that I would say, though, is the reason that I think we held, now realize Davenport didn't play against Tampa Bay in the 3rd game. And I'm not trying to say Davenport is the end-all be-all. But the first 2 games, the reason that we were able to help hold him in check is that we got a good pass rush and Brady had to get the ball quick. And, you know, when you know the quarterback has to get rid of the ball quick, you can jump routes, you can do things like that. So you stop the run, you put Brady in long passing situations. My point is that, okay, look, I'm not naive. Quite frankly, I think the Saints going to have a very hard time winning this game. But I think it'll be a low-scoring game, and I don't think that Brady's going to be able to go off. Looking at their schedule, they haven't really played a lot of good defenses that could get after the quarterback. So it'll be interesting, because I do believe that's the reason why we were able to beat them twice last year, is because Brady wasn't as effective. And you could say whatever reason, maybe it was early in the season, whatever, but the Saints defense held him in check because of the pass rush. He's the kind of guy, man, he don't move. So you can pick a spot and go get him, you know?
No, he don't. He moves just well enough.
Yes, that's true too. Just a little bit.
You know, not only mainly because of his experience and all, right? But he's that guy that knows how to just
navigate
a little bit in that pocket. And he gets rid of the ball so fast that, you know, he has never been a guy that's been sacked a lot. And so I don't that was really my only point. I don't expect to see him eat from the sack standpoint against Brady. Lesser quarterbacks. I don't think it's going to happen against Brady.
Right. I agree with that. Now, and again, maybe not sacks, but the pressures, which means that he won't be able to go off. And also Brown, the wide receiver, Antonio Brown, it looks like he's not going to be playing. Although Gronk, Gronk can still play because he's a big body and he has good hands, but he's not the Gronk of old. I think our linebackers can handle him.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the kid from the Raiders. So, you know, well, and I'll transition to this. Any final thoughts that you have?
No, I mean, this is going to be a tough game this week coming up, but you know, we got a week of some of our returners, you know, like we already talked about Traquan and some of these guys, the offensive line, McCoy now at least, because, you know, now we Pete, but Armstead and McCoy coming back, game under their belt, back into the flow of things. You know, so now I don't know about Harris. You know, we really need Harris to come back.
We do.
Harris, just not only the deep pass and that little out that he runs that he kind of always seems, but like we talked about with the punt game, if nothing else, just not giving up another 15 yards of roll because he knows how to judge it and go up and get the ball instead of backing off and letting it hit the ground and that sort of thing, which I don't. That's more saying about the fact that Harris does it all the time and is good at it. It's not really so much a knock on Callaway. You're not the guy doing that all the time. Running out there and having 11 guys running down the field wide speed.
Right. No, it's not an easy thing.
Trying to watch them in the ball and everything. I'm sure it's not easy at all, right? And so it's not really a knock on Callaway. It's more a praise of Harris, just that he's good at what he does. So he helps us in more than one way.
Right.
And then if Michael Thomas really does come back, which, you know, like I said, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't either. I think that's just,
you know, Keyshawn Johnson is a talker. His mouth keeps flapping and whatever comes out. I don't know. I don't know what he really knows and what that would be great. And that would certainly be a bonus, but I'm like you, I don't know how we're going to generate enough offense this week. That's going to be, defense is going to have to play as well as they have and do their part to give our offense any chance at hanging in this game or even having a shot to win it, you know?
So Kevin White, they bring him up because he's a speed guy. And I remember when the Saints signed him, Peyton said, if we can find a role for him, maybe that role would just be the guy that stretches the field.
Right.
Deontay Harris goes down and all of a sudden here comes White and people are like, oh, well, why? Really? The guy's one of the faster guys on the team.
Yeah.
It, even if he didn't develop the way you expect him to, that's the reason they brought him up. So, and this, I could go in two different directions. Bringing Deontay back, you have not only a punt returner, but a guy who's, I mean, look, behind Thomas, Deontay is our best receiver. The problem is he's just small and he has his own injury issues. So he's another guy you don't want taking a lot of punishment. So you prefer just to have him on the field, not running a bunch of routes, staying out of harm's way. And when I say routes, I mean not running inside routes, just kind of keeping his limited route tree where you're not really getting banged up. But I will say this, after Kevin White dropped, and it's arguable, dropped or couldn't come down with what would have probably been a pretty great catch, people ready to cut him. I look at it and I say, man, look, we already have a bad receiving core. It's not like he's taking up a roster spot that we need for somebody else.
Right.
It's not like, I mean, the guy is a high ceiling guy. Maybe he develops, maybe he doesn't. But at this point, he's not making a lot of money. There is zero reason. And so I got into a debate with a guy and he said, cut him. And I said, okay, he did drop that ball. But you tell me how the Saints game, if nothing else, he can go on the field and run really fast and keep the defense honest. I said, what do we gain by cutting him?
Nothing really.
Other than saving your feelings.
Right.
But there's this other part of me that says, why have they been keeping him around so long? And I wonder if that answer to that isn't that I read this article about him and it went through and detailed all the issues he had and why he's where he's at. And it was a lot of it's from his perspective. And quite frankly, he had injury problems, but the injuries weren't like, they were mostly like he broke his fibula. You know, that's not I'm injury prone. That's some dude ran at you too hard or however you did it. And then he broke his clavicle. But the problem sounded more like his understanding of the offense, he made a lot of mistakes. So I wonder if the Saints found a way to say, listen, you're going to be that Devery Henderson type. Your job is to stretch defenses and you run a limited route tree. You got that 12 yard out, you got the deep ball, you got the post, and don't worry about the rest of the stuff. And there's a part of me, because I know how physically gifted he is, that could he help us? And so did he come in because Harris was down, or did the door open to say, we think he's ready to do more? Because listen, I don't think that, oh, well, he dropped that pass. It did hit him in the hands. he's running 100 miles an hour. It's kind of going out of bounds. It's on his outside shoulder. I've seen guys make that play. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not ready to cut him because he didn't. Right. But let me also say this. Had the circumstances been the same as the ones that Deontay Harris caught, where he's running wide open and the ball literally floats into his stomach, right, like I think White could have caught that ball if it was that. And then I asked myself, would Deontay Harris have caught the ball that White couldn't bring in?
Right.
So
right.
Where I'm going with this is that, listen, we have seen that the Saints are a downfield passing team. That's what they do best right now. And I'm going to be really interested to see that when Deontay comes back, does White go back to the practice squad or the Saints? Hey, the reason we had you on the practice squad is we need you to learn the offense and be more comfortable and get some confidence. Listen, the bottom line is he's a guy with a high ceiling, and I'm just looking for anything. Because they were Willie Snead's available. I'm like, tell me how Willie Snead helps us better than what we already have. No. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I just wish he could, man, it's like, I guess if nothing else, the downing the punt on the 1 yard line bought him another week anyway. I mean, that was a great special teams play, right?
Listen,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, if the guy can play gunner,
right,
and he's fast, and
which I didn't know he played before.
You tell me the seventh pick of the draft superstar ever played special teams anywhere?
Right, exactly.
But they're hey, line up out there, go get the guy with the ball, and he did it. And so the point is, if he can do that. Right. That keeps him around a little bit longer.
That's going to help him. Yeah, that's going to help. But eventually he's going to have to catch something, right? I mean, we saw him in the preseason. He had two drops or whatever, only two passes he tried. The real problem that the Saints have is that you had two guys, two passes in a row. Both of them would have been good catches, but they both couldn't come up with it in White and Stills, right? Two guys that came off the street, one guy that's been out of football for 5 years or whatever it's been. And so it's like, that's where we are right now. And these are guys that at one time were getting, Kenny Stills got almost 40 touchdown passes in the NFL. So he's a guy that he's got some ability, obviously. Right. I mean, but there's a reason why he was at the house when the phone rang.
Right.
And so you just can't have too many of those guys on your team at the same time. We got a collection of those guys right now.
Well, you keep getting anything you can that might be able to help. So, and again, I'll be the first to admit that maybe I'm trying to make a bunch of excuses for a guy that, I mean, if all of a sudden magic hit and it was like, oh, he's the guy that we thought he was, or some version of that, then you struck gold. The bottom line is right now we'd be happy with just a guy who just has a role that does it pretty good. Because again, outside of Harris, who's the guy that's just beating coverage? Because the one thing even everybody was saying on Monday night is, he's the one guy, aside from Harris, that can create separation. The problem is, can he come down with the ball? Now, look, I'm not ready to give up on him. Those two slants, he had been on the team like 3 days. I was surprised he even got in the game. The guy, obviously, man, to me, he has some confidence issues, and they need to find a way to build his confidence.
That's the whole thing, I think. That's a big part of it with him is we know he's got hands. The guy can catch the ball. We saw what he did at West Virginia when he was in college. He can definitely catch the ball, okay? It's not like all of a sudden he just forget how to catch the ball. It's a confidence thing. And then, so every time he comes in now and every other drop that happens, it's that sort of thing. It gets worse and worse,
Michael Thomas drops the ball and nobody does. Oh, my God. Thomas is going to – he's going to fall apart. But a guy like that, man, it's – boy, that once you miss the reputation – and we talked about it with Jameis Winston. Oh, I turned the ball over too much. So everything he does is like, oh, let me make sure it's perfect and don't. And then he doesn't pull the trigger. And then it's like, God forbid, if you get a couple of turnovers, then it just perpetuates, man.
Right.
With a guy like him, he needs that one catch. I mean, the thing about it, I want to say, just give him that easy catch. Well, in the preseason, they tried to do that. Two slants, two drops. Listen, but we know it's not his hands. It's not his hands.
No, it's not. And the funny thing is, here, I give you a little bit of hope, and I'm not comparing these two players, but just from the standpoint of Ja'Marr Chase couldn't catch a cold in the preseason for the Bengals, though. He looked worse than White looked when he came in. I mean, literally, he couldn't catch anything. Then he comes in, the lights come on, he has that first big catch, and look at him now, dude. He looks as good or better than he did when he was at LSU. Yeah,
he looks incredible.
It's unbelievable. And so, in the same way, I hope – at some point, White is going to have that play and he's going to catch that pass and he's going to make a play, and then that's going to get the confidence roll. And it, you know, like I said, I don't expect him to ever be great. He's not going to be number seven pick guy.
He would have done it already. I mean, right. Yes.
But if he could just be solid
and have a role. You know, and again, role, right. I want to go back to what Peyton said. And he just, like, I don't remember verbatim. It was quite a while back. But he thought that if there was a role for him as just a guy who was a field stretcher. In other words, man, let's not complicate this with a bunch of the entire route tree. Let's right. just start off. You run down the field. You stretch the defense. It's going to be this three or four different routes. And guys have made a living doing that.
Yep.
And then, you know what, if all of a sudden you work him into, like, maybe we'll add another route to it. And the point is, he can be valuable. He's big. He's tall. He's strong. He has all the traits of a top draft pick.
Yep.
And he's just the confidence. He keeps getting hurt. And again, I'll go back to the article I read, is I think he lacks confidence, and not only on the field, but he's just made a lot of mistakes. Well, let's put him in a position where there's not a lot of mistakes to be made. Yeah. Run that way as fast as you can, yep. and I'll throw you the ball. And I bet you if we could just get him a ball, I ain't gonna lie. Part of me is just like begging right now. All I'm doing is like on the corner with a spare change, brother. You got some spare change? I just need something to hope for right now.
Yep.
You know, we hoping Michael Thomas comes back. But boy, what if something else happened? Another miracle, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, listen, I said that was us wrapping it up in final thoughts, and it didn't happen. So I'm just ending it right here. Thank you guys for listening. And listen, Jeff was supposed to send me a little script so I could do that thing at the end of the show. And I finally had enough time because he was running late to print it up. And I get in some Google thing and I have to wait for him to. So listen, we have a whole network of great shows all on one feed, the Dome Patrol podcast, the BS and Beer podcast, Taking the Over. We have the soccer podcast, United. Scott does the Tiger Den, which is obviously an LSU podcast. And then we also have Taking the Over, which is a gambling podcast, all on one site, man. It's awesome. Hit us up, push that like button, and enjoy all the stuff that comes on that one feed. So for Heath Elson-San, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we'll talk to you next week. And
anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Hope I don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Ooh. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast.